There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 387. I have a special guest joining us today, a first-timer on the show. You can find his work at rotowire.com. He's kicking butt in the NFBC. He even won a free main event ticket, which we'll let him talk about as well. He's doing really good at this stuff, and he's really good at doing the closers charts at rotowire.com. You can find him on Twitter at Ryan Roof, R-U-F-E. Ryan, how we doing, man?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it. When's Sam kicking butt at the NFBC? I think my winning the main event qualifier is my lone highlight of the year.
So. You did that for like $50 though, or something, right?
Yeah, it was $50.
I'd say that's a pretty good ROI. Just all things considered, even if you don't win any money, that's pretty solid.
So yeah, we won't talk about the several hundred I dropped afterwards trying to get another one, but
you're still plus money, right? So it's all good. Exactly. It's a cool format over there. I keep wanting to do it, then I forget about it. It's Fridays only, right, over at FanBall?
Yeah, so I think they took a break recently. Okay. They were doing them every week, and then some of them they were having trouble filling. So I think they took a break for a little while. I wouldn't be surprised if they brought them back towards the end of the year. But, they're fun. DFF is always fun.
Yeah, no, I do DFS on the daily, but DraftKings stuff. So I keep meaning to do it, and I just kind of like zone out and forget all about it. So, that'll be something we're checking out. And then I wanted to make sure I got this right. So is this your first year delving into the online championships, or have you done this before?
Yeah, I've been in the online championship since apparently 2014. Yeah, doing the OCs for a while, draft champions since I think 2013. So never done a main event. So really excited for that. Doing a main event qualifier this year, try to grab another seat, but it's looking unlikely. The injuries keep popping up, but
yeah, it's been a wild year along those lines. That's what I was going to ask is, from year to year now that you've been playing since 14 in fab leagues, and you've obviously done the DCs. This year has been crazy, as you said, with all the injuries. How have you just kind of approached things differently? Because everyone's spending fab, everyone's doing this just to kind of fill the roster sometimes.
Yeah, it's actually I have several teams where every bench spot is a red briefcase, and you try to think about it. Guys like Strasburg and Flaherty, like how long do you hold these guys? I mean, how long do you hold them for? And it's been a tough year to navigate, especially with all the injuries. There's nothing out there. I mean, even in 12s, it's hard to find. Good options. And 15s is, I mean, we're rostering players that, you never would have thought you would have rostered. So it's tough to navigate, but you gotta grind through it, man.
Yeah, no, it is a grind. That's it's the best way to put it this year. Very, very challenging stuff indeed. So we'll keep grinding on because we've got a little over 2 months of the season to go. So we'll go over some recent news real quick and kind of how we grind through that. And then we'll talk about your bullpen, your latest update, and kind of go through. I wasn't planning on doing almost every team, but as I went through the grid, I'm like, I'm done. Like, it seems like there's question marks on so many situations. So we'll go through a chunk of them, that's for sure. But let's talk some recent news. And I kind of messaged you earlier that there's one addition I was going to make to the deal, because after I typed this up, the news dropped that Nick Castellanos has a microfracture in his wrist. And I kind of wonder what was going on earlier in the day, because he pinch hit like on Monday night, but he's hasn't been in the lineup any days. So you're thinking, okay, well, he pinch hit, but he's not playing yet. What's going on? MRI revealed a microfracture. Latest report on Thursday said he's going to miss several weeks. So what's your thoughts? Like you said, when do we drop these guys? And Cassie's been so amazing this year, but wrist injuries can just zap all your production. Like we'll talk about another guy in a little bit. What are you doing with a guy like Castellanos on, say, an NFBC league with no injured reserve?
That's tough, yeah. I think I'd probably hold him for a week and see if other news pops, right? I mean, you always with the star caliber players like Castellanos, it's, you know, and Flaherty and other people, you don't want to drop them and then only to see your biggest competitors pick them up and, you know, they go crazy for him. So I'm always kind of cautious with the star players, you know, unless it's a, you know, Cunha situation where they're out for the year, you know, that's known. But yeah, I might hold for a few weeks with Castellanos, just a brutal blow to the Reds and miss their playoff race. I mean, Suarez has been awful. I mean, Tyler Naquin is one of their standouts on offense. So yeah,
it's a lot.
their chances of making the playoffs is looking pretty slim now.
Yeah, it's tough because it's like with Casty going down, like you said, it kind of lowers their chances quite a bit. And you were tweeting out, and we'll obviously talk more about it in the bullpen section, but you're tweeting out stuff like maybe they go back and trade for Iglesias or something, like, oops, we screwed up, we need a closer. I might take that out of the question now. So we got that going.
I think so.
But you made a good point. Like I'd hold Casty for another week or two and see what happens, because there's like two sides to it. It's if they do completely fall out of it, do they just say, screw it, we'll bring him back next season when he's healthy, and then he's so you can kind of drop him then. Or, hey, it's a microfracture. Maybe it heals quick, so he's back in like 3 weeks or 4 weeks. You never know. So it is a tricky one. I guess we got to kind of see how that one goes, because it wasn't too long ago we thought Eloy Jimenez and Luis Robert were out for the entire season, and now Eloy should be back in like a week or so, and Lou Bob just started rehab. So it goes like everybody that dropped them, and he dropped them on the proper news at the time. Now you're sitting there going, oof. So, it's tough stuff there. Let's talk about some youngsters, because this year it's been tough for prospects to kind of get their footing in the bigs, especially the hitting side of it, surprisingly. So Vidal Brujan's the latest to get demoted back to AAA. Everyone, you know, knows the tools are there, wasn't playing every day. That was always a big concern. What have you – like, you can keep or drop Brujan, whatever you want. But what have you been doing with these young prospects? Because Kalinic's struggling again, and he might get demoted here shortly.
Yeah, I've been holding him, Kalinic and Brujan, I think I'm going to drop, but he was only playing against some lefties. But, you know, these are the guys, you know, is holding, you know, your fab for, right? Like, you know, I've spent, you know, didn't go over 100 on Brujan because, you know, he was struggling a bit before his call up. But, you know, Duran, you know, is another guy, you know, invested significant fab dollars in. And, you know, Brujan just wasn't getting it done. I mean, 0.77, 31% K rate, no walks. I mean, after that hot start in the minors, he's really cooled off. So, you know, you see kind of the upside there and what he could do, especially for the stolen base category, but I don't think he can hold him.
Yeah, I don't think he can hold him either. It's always my problem with these prospects is, are they going to play every day? And you mentioned with Brujan, Duran's even platooning. At least he's on the strong side of it. Like, he's not playing versus lefties. They just happen to face a lot of lefties this week. But when he's played versus righties, he's looked good. He's hitting second. So that's promising. Yeah. Maybe eventually they'll work something out there to let him play. We'll see. So I wouldn't worry about Duran as much. But Brujan, I really wouldn't be surprised if Kalinic's sent back down if he keeps this up. He's like 3 for – I saw somewhere he's 3 for 20 with 9 Ks since his recent call-up. And that's not going to cut it either. Wander Franco is kind of treading water right now, but he's really not surprising. He's not really knocking the cover off the ball. So it's been a weird year. I think like the only prospect that's really kept it going is Logan Gilbert after his rough start pitching. He's looked a lot better now, but man, it's been weird. Cause like you said, everyone puts their fab dollars into these prospects. and it's just not panning out. It's like either that or you try to get a closer, and neither situation is paying out a ton these days on the market. So we'll have to wait and see. The thing is with these prospects, they'll be back up in September. So you might get them for super cheap because no one has fab dollars left. So something to think exactly. Keep thinking about there. Speaking of a prospect that is down and out for the rest of the year, this is a bummer, is Alex Kirilloff. He was off to a great start to the season. Then he hurt his wrist, missed some time, came back, and he has not been the same. And it's the age-old adage that we never know how hurt these guys really are. And he was playing through an injury, and it kind of showed and made sense once he decided to have wrist surgery, and he's out for the rest of the season. So obviously you can drop Alex Kirilloff.
He's a pretty obvious drop. He had that sprained wrist back in May, and you just wonder if, you know, it just never healed, or they just missed, something where, you know, they needed surgery. But you could tell something was kind of off because, you know, when he came back from that wrist injury, he was doing pretty well. But then in the 9 games before undergoing surgery, he was hitting just .138. But, solid rookie debut overall, though. A lot of red on his Statcast page, 83rd percentile in barrel rate, 92nd in XBA and X slugging. So got a lot of potential, but bummer for the Twins. You know, Sierra, they're not performing well. So, yeah. I mean, it's the time to play your young guys, and it's unfortunate he won't be in there.
And you mentioned the Statcast page is beautiful for Kirilloff. I was loving Kirilloff during the season, not for good reasons. And it just makes me wonder now when we kind of look at draft season next year, where do we see a guy like Kirilloff going? Because we saw the potential that he has. Like, we saw that the upside was there. You'd assume he's healthy next go around. Top of your head, spitballing, where do you think he lands in, like, the outfielder type situation?
Good question. First thing that came to mind was round 10. I don't know if that's too early or too late.
Could be right. So. Yeah, that could be like earlier, a 15-team league. 15-team league, that's like 150-ish, give or take.
Yeah, and maybe he starts there and, you know, the helium grows as draft season goes on.
Yeah, I think I wouldn't be shocked because the prospect hype every year seems like it gets bigger and bigger as drafts come along. He's one of those guys I could see creeping towards that 100 mark just because of what we did see with him at one point in time. So that'll be interesting to see how that one plays out.
It didn't strike out a lot either. 22% K rate. Doesn't walk much, chases a bit, but that was really the only kind of negative on his Statcast page. But yeah, very promising.
Yeah, very, very promising. And then, you know, that pretty much locks in Trevor Larnach now, because that was always a question. Where's Larnach going to go when Buxton comes back, whenever Buxton comes back, for however long Buxton's back this time? So that's a question. You got Kepler there. I guess basically it locks in that situation, which is, I guess, a good thing to keep in mind as well.
Yeah, I think so. Larnach's been in a brutal stretch, though. Struck out almost 50% of the time over his last 10 games, hitting like 100 or something like that. It's been bad, but I think this pretty much locks him into a role. Just try to get through it. Kepler, yeah, hopefully Buxton's back soon too, because he's an exciting player.
Yeah, we need Buxton back. The Twins need Buxton back, so that's very true. Austin Gomber's back, though. He came back for Colorado, and I it's always a tongue-in-cheek thing because everyone remembers getting Gombered, but I've talked to other people about it since then, because I got Gombered that week, but I kept him, and I kept using him, and it was very, very productive. When he went down, I was actually seriously bummed that we lost a guy that I could kind of trust. He came back and threw well in Colorado. How aggressive would you be going back and trying to get him off the wire this week?
I'd be pretty aggressive. He was the prize of the Arenado deal. It's pretty clear he's the future of the Rockies starting rotation. I mean, people bag on that trade, but Gomber's been good. I mean, he's been really good. Had mixed results in his return, gave up 3 home runs to the Mariners, but those were the only hits he allowed in the game. He's won 5 of his last 7 starts. The thing with Colorado pitchers that's always kind of frustrating is people just assume like you shouldn't start him at home. Yep. Gomber has a 1.98 ERA at home and 0.85 WHIP. So I'd go after him. I mean, that was the same with John Gray. John Gray's got a better home ERA than he does on the road. So I'd be pretty aggressive trying to get Gomber. He's been good.
It's been interesting. Like you've mentioned those road home splits, as it used to be like a foregone conclusion, like you said, to not even think about it. But Gomber, even Marquez has been better this year at home than on the road. I think almost all of them have been better at home than on the road this year, which is really crazy to think about. But yeah, I'm going to be going after Gomber wherever I can. I like what he's shown. He's even got the strikeout upside. His biggest thing early in the year was the walks, and knock on wood, he's controlled that for the most part since he got Gombered. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what he has to offer the last couple months of the season. And on the bright side, if we want to play like really happy side of things, with so many guys getting innings limits pretty soon, he just got his rest. So we got him for the rest of the year, most likely. So that's a positive.
Yeah, absolutely.
Speaking of young pitchers that'll probably be monitored for innings the rest of the way, Luis Patino will be pitching on Thursday. We are recording Thursday afternoon. We're pitching Thursday evening, and reports out of Tampa Bay is if he does well, he can earn a spot in the rotation, which is music to a lot of fantasy players' ears. What's your expectation on a guy like Luis Patino that we know that the prospect pedigree is there? We just haven't seen it in full force yet.
Yeah, I'm pretty optimistic about Patino. Went six innings in his most recent start in the minors, has been going five-ish prior to that for about a month. Really nice 11 strikeout shutout about a month ago. Just been solid overall at Triple A Durham. 3.07 ERA, good strikeout potential. I wonder though, like, do the Rays go six man now? Do they trade Waka, who hasn't really been good? Just kind of wonder what they're going to do there. But yeah, I'm pretty optimistic about Patino.
It will be interesting. That's a good point. The six man, you know, that they will be active in the trade market. They always are. And they're still and they're towards the top of the division, which is crazy. So they'll move pieces and still compete, which is what the Rays do. But it's a good point with Waka, because Waka, they don't let go past 4 to 5 innings ever. Like they monitor him. When Patino first came up, like Waka was opening for Patino. So there's a few ways they can go about it for sure. But like you mentioned, Patino's been going five-ish or more. He stretched out to 90-plus pitches in pretty much every outing, which is good to see, especially for a Rays pitcher, where we usually get the yo-yoed around sometimes. So I'm very optimistic. He's a guy – I got to be more aggressive for Gomber this weekend, but Patino's a guy I want to put some bids in on because he's got that strikeout upside. As we're this deep into the season now, you're not really chasing ratios as much because those are hard to control. So if you're okay in ratios, Patino's got the win upside and the strikeout upside that can be quite favorable, I think. Come the last couple months of the year. So I'm with you on that one. Josiah Gray, he made his debut against the Giants the other night, and he pitched like they had an opener come start the game. He came in, though, and gave up a few home runs, but also struck out seven and only walked one or two, I believe, in his four innings of work. So he had the good and the bad. Gave up the long ball, a few too many, but then looked dominant with the strikeout stuff. He's going to pitch again on Sunday. Looks like he's going to stick around for a little while. So what's your thoughts on Josiah Gray?
Yeah, the Dodgers need him to stick around. No Kershaw, Bauer, Dustin May's out. Gonsolin's been ineffective. So he's RotoWire's 65th ranked prospect. James Anderson does a great job with our top 400 prospect list. 22-2 K to walk and 15 in the third AAA innings. So that's really promising. Yeah, the long ball. See if he can correct the long ball issues next time out, but. Yeah, he's another one of those guys like Patino where, you know, Gray and Patino, you know, may be the most effective, rookie starters that we're going to be able to grab late.
Yeah, that's what's fun about it, especially a guy like Gray, because the Dodgers, like you said, they need him. We could also see them using the opener every time, and we saw how well that's worked for Rays pitchers of, like, you just snag those easy wins type scenarios, and that could play out good because we know that the Dodgers are going to score runs. That's going to be pretty simple to see. So I'm really curious. He gets for the Fab bidding, it's going to stink because he gets Colorado on Sunday, which is going to be very favorable. So he's probably on paper should throw a pretty good outing, and it'll definitely raise the price a bit. But I'm with you. He's another one, and it's kind of funny. I started out the show kind of poo-pooing on prospects not doing so well, and here we are talking about Patino and Gray, and these guys like, let's go spend money on them. But like, I'm not breaking the bank for any of these guys. That's any listener of my shows knows that by now. Like, I'm prospects I'm very hesitant to go too crazy on, but with pitching landscape the way we need it, the one thing I'll say about Gray is they're super, super cognitive of limiting his innings. That's one thing I'll say is he only had, I think, 15 innings before he made his start on Tuesday. So keep that in mind with Gray, unlike the others, that could be different.
Yeah, especially in comparison to Patino. I mean, I'd prioritize him over Gray just because, you know, the innings upside is higher.
Totally agree with that one. And then another prospect, he's been around a little longer. We've seen him, the good and the bad with Atlanta in the last couple of years, is Touki Toussaint, who threw 6 2/3 solid innings, 5 Ks, 1 run against San Diego, of all teams, his last time out. And he's been pretty strong coming his last couple starts before he got called up. The strikeouts have been there. The innings have been there with Toussaint. We've had the roller coaster ride with him before. Are you maybe taking a chance on him this time around thinking? And one thing a previous guest of mine mentioned, we got to remember he's still super young. Like, everyone wants to throw these guys under, like, out there right away. He's only 25, so he might be figuring it out finally. Are you buying into Touki this time around?
I'm not, just because he walked 14 in 23 1/3 in the minors this year. I know he had a nice outing against the Padres. You know, maybe they were just off. But the thing for me is just, you know, the flashes have been shown in the past, but he's just struggled to find that consistency. If he shows it, sure, I'll buy in. But at that point, it'll probably be too late. And, you know, I think in 15-teamers, you take what you can get. There's not much there on the wire, but I'm not going after Toussaint.
Yeah, it's a dicey one. I definitely have him after Gray and Patino on that list. But I can see the appeal in streaming situations with him. But his biggest problem, like you mentioned, the walks, that was always the problem in previous years too. The walks just crushed him, and then he'd give up like a 3-run homer. That's the little, like, those little things really eat away at you, so keep that in mind. A couple injury news is here. Alex Bregman is about to start a rehab assignment, looks like, so you might get him back in another couple weeks, which is good to hear if you've held on to him. Jacob deGrom goes on the IL. And Ryan, I don't know about you, but I'm nervous for the fact that they're saying he might begin throwing shortly.
I think he resumed throwing today.
Okay, good. Good.
Yeah, RotoWire just had a note about that. So, yeah, and I think they said they weren't going to have him throw until he felt better. So I think this is a promising sign. I was hoping the Mets wouldn't rush him back just because, you know, I have him in a few teams. But they're only 2.5 games ahead of the Phillies in the NL East. You know, they've been 5-5 since his last start on July 7th. So I was hoping they wouldn't rush him, you know, but we'll see. We'll see what he looks like when he comes back. Sure, it'll be the same old DeGrom, but.
Yeah, I was hoping they wouldn't rush him because I'm like you, is I want him back for the long haul. I don't want this back and forth, the IL, which we've seen. And it's really frustrating, as you probably saw before, is when he said, yeah, most of these injuries before this last one was all because I was swinging a bat. So that makes you feel so good about this whole situation. It's like, yeah, we could have prevented all of this fun stuff. And then lastly, when it comes to the Mets, Carlos Carrasco, his latest rehab assignment got pushed back a few days, but he's still on target to return shortly, it says. So if he's available, you got a shot. Are you looking at grabbing a guy like Carrasco if he's available? Because we know how good he can be, but this injury has kept sticking around, it felt like.
Yeah, I feel like if you can get him for a few bucks, I think that'll be worth it. I wouldn't expect more than a couple innings if he does return to the Mets. Maybe 2-3 innings at most. He's not really stretched out. And he really struggled in his last rehab start. He gave up 5 runs and an inning and 2/3 with 3 home runs. So he's one of my favorite stories in baseball. He's obviously a former Indian, battled back from leukemia. So I'm rooting for him, but I won't be investing too heavily in fantasy.
Yeah, it sucked because I'm always a Cookie fan, especially just because of the story, as you mentioned. But just for fantasy, like, it seems like he always gets undervalued. So come draft day, you get him at a good price tag. He's a workhorse. Seems like a great guy. He's always smiling and having fun. Good leader. So when he got traded to the Mets, I was all, heck yeah. Because now he goes to the National League. He's got Stroman and DeGrom ahead of him. So he's not he doesn't have to be the ace anymore, stuff like that. And then, it all kind of unraveled from there. So that was a bummer. Last bit of news, we don't have to talk about it at all, but I did see Chris Sale is going to join the Red Sox. He has one more rehab assignment, though. So he's going to travel with the team, I should say. But he's got one more rehab assignment, and if that goes well, he might be back on the rotation here in about a week or so. So that's good news if you held him this long. That's finally getting something out of Chris Sale. I'm curious to see what they do with him, but it looks like from all the rehab starts, Ryan, he's pretty much been full go. So I'm really curious to see how this goes.
Yeah, we'll see what we get when he comes back.
All right, let's talk some closers. Before we get into it, like, talk to the listeners more about what you're doing with this closer grid, how you go about it, how you just keep up with all the insanity that takes place each and every night of, oh, wait, now Scott Barlow got the other save. So now three Royals have five saves. And, oh, wait, now this guy's in getting closers because this guy pitched the sixth today. Like, so much fun stuff. How do you go about the whole process?
Yeah, my process is I usually go in about once a week and update all 30 teams and just kind of see what's happened over the past week. You know, who got saves, who didn't, who got, you know, high leverage usage. You know, I think by now we've learned some of the manager's tendencies. We know Kevin Cash is going to be, you know, if he's got all of his relievers healthy, he's going to be a committee. Same with Mike Matheny in Kansas City and Scott Service in Seattle. I think those guys are just, you know, want to use committees. They're using that new approach that we're seeing more and more teams kind of employ. Yeah, I just go in and update our closer depth charts, our closers in waiting rankings and just update the closer notes for RotoWire.
Yeah, no, it's a job that I don't envy. I'll say that much. Like, I know yourself, Greg Jewett and many others do the constant closers work. And I'm just like, you guys are, you guys got some crazy stuff. That's all I know. Cause it's a headache. And then you probably have, like, you know, the wonderful people on Twitter and stuff that they're never bad or anything that go, well, you said so-and-so. So I can already see that. I can already see that one coming. Like, you knew how this was supposed to work.
F you.
Yeah. No, right. Trust me. I get that giving DFS content daily. I get it all the time. Yeah. So I can only imagine because these guys are spending hundreds of dollars in fab. It's just like, guys, come on. You're trying to spend a lot of money on the closer for one of the worst teams in baseball. So this is what's gonna
exactly.
happen to you. Yeah. this is par for the course, guys.
My response to that is always, you know what? You own your team, right? You make the decision. Right? We can guide you. At the end of the day, you make the choice.
Exactly. It's like an instruction manual for anything you buy. It's just telling you how to do it. You still have to put it together. It's on you at that point. So I'm with you 100% there. So let's go through some teams. As I mentioned, I wasn't planning on putting this many teams, but just going through a list, I'm like, well, there's a question and there's a question and so on and so forth. So we'll start. It goes kind of American League to National League here. Let's start with Baltimore. You have Tyler Wells as the closer now with low job security, but we saw Tanner Scott the other day get some. Cole Sulcer had his run. Paul Fries had his run. Cesar Valdez was great until he just completely blew up because the one-pitch changeup was never going to work full-time. So what's your take here? We had a few listeners even asking, what's the deal with Tyler Wells?
Yeah. So Dan Connolly covers the Orioles for The Athletic. He had a recent note that said it appears Wells will get most of the save opportunities moving forward. I mean, we'll see. I don't know if Brandon Hyde values a full-time closer role when the team's rebuilding. I guess we did see it kind of early in the season with Valdez pitching so effectively early on. I think he got eight of the first 11 saves for the team. Paul Fry had a couple. Cole Sulcer has some. But if you look at some of the usage post All-Star break, Sulcer kind of was in the chair before I kind of penciled in Wells. And in his three appearances since the All-Star break, he pitched and this is Sulcer we're talking about, he pitched the eighth with a 5-0 lead, the seventh with a 6-1 lead, and then he came on in the sixth to protect a 4-3 lead. So still high leverage, but no longer really the closer, it appears. So actually tweeted a couple weeks ago that I thought Tanner Scott was going to get an opportunity after the All-Star break, and he did. Unfortunately, he blew it yesterday against the Rays. He loaded the bases, and Austin Meadows hit a walk-off to win that game. But just kind of look at part of my – you were talking about process earlier. Part of my process is really kind of looking you know, not only at the usage, but like performance over like the past month, past 10 days, see, you know, how these guys are pitching, if there's a trends. It was kind of how I identified Josh Stallman of the Royals. He's been bad since like mid-May, and he hasn't gotten a save since like May 19th. So just kind of look at that and, you know, see who's pitching well, see who isn't, and just kind of eyeball like, well, this guy's, you know, got 10 straight scoreless appearances. Maybe, you know, they give him a shot in the ninth.
When you're looking at closers, because you mentioned Tyler Wells, and honestly, I do a lot of fantasy baseball stuff, and I didn't even really know who he was until about a week ago. When you're talking about guys like that, how aggressive would you be? Again, this is the Orioles, who are always mixing and matching, as you said. You don't know if they're going to stick around. So kind of breaking the bank on guys like this is kind of tough. It'd be one thing if, you know, we'll talk about the Cubs in a minute, and there's a chance, well, whoever takes it is going to be the guy or something. It's put a scenario there. So you spend a little more money knowing he's the guy. Right. With a guy like Wells, we could, you know, see him for 2 weeks and he's out again or something. How aggressive would you be on him come Sunday?
Not very. The positive trend with Wells is since the All-Star break, he's pitched the ninth in both games that he's pitched. One with a 6-1 lead against Tampa Bay and one in a 4-run game against Kansas City. And if he was available yesterday, he was going to apparently get the save opportunity, but he wasn't available. So trends are looking like he's going to get the next opportunity. Like you said, though, the Orioles are, you know, one of the worst teams in baseball. You know, Hyde likes to mix and match. He's already used four different relievers in the closer role. So, you know, I'm not breaking the bank for Wells, but it's promising season. He's a rookie. He's capable of pitching multiple innings. I think they were talking about trying him out as a starter at one point. But really promising 32% K rate, 5% walk rate. So, I mean, maybe he takes it and runs with it. I know the Orioles really like him. So
you mentioned the multi-inning possibility, or just basically he's throwing good innings, period. When you're looking for a reliever or a closer come on a Sunday fab period, and the closer situations are bleak, how likely are you to go and grab like a Wells or, you know, a Funkhauser for Detroit or some other guys that might not run into saves but could really help other aspects out, since you know the depth of bullpens, and then you think, hey, maybe in like 3 weeks this guy's got the new chance. How likely are you to grab those kind of guys for like a buck right now?
Yeah, I think it's a smart move. You know, especially if you get them cheap and then they eventually land in the role. I mean, obviously, you know, if you're well set in saves and ratios, I'm probably not looking there. But if I have the room to, like, you know, like for example, 18 team RotoWire staff keeper league, I'm gonna look to add him. You know, because I'm starting a few relievers. I'm starting Brent Suter in that league and a couple others. So in those deeper formats, definitely. You know, in the 12, there's probably a lot more pitching depth available to choose from. So I may not need to roster someone like Wells, who's, you know, could still give you good ratios, but you may be still able to find enough good starters to fill out your rotation.
All right, let's go to the Detroit Tigers. We have Gregory Soto picked up another save on Wednesday night. He's looked pretty good for the most part. He's had his hiccups at times. You have Jose Cisnero, who's looked pretty good. Obviously, Michael Fulmer was there because they're trying to trade him. He got hurt yet again. So right now you got Soto and Cisnero there. Are those the main guys you're looking at, or is there a potential third guy, assuming that both these guys maybe get traded?
So I think Soto's the guy. He's been incredible since June 1st. 250 ERA, 089 whip. Got 10 saves overall. But Fulmer's beginning his rehab assignment today. Okay. And I think what the Tigers will try to do is they'll maybe try to get him a save opportunity before the deadline, just to try to establish some trade value. So, you know, while Soto's gotten the most recent saves for the team, I think, you know, we might have a little break here, maybe a week or two, where, you know, we might see Fulmer get a couple or Cisnero step in. Cisnero's been excellent too. 32 years old, 14 of his last 15 outings have been scoreless. So he's really good. And the other guy to keep an eye on in this bullpen is Kyle Funkhauser. He's got a 15.1 inning scoreless streak. So bullpen's been really good, and the Tigers are in third place. They're on the rise, man. Like, this team could be pretty good.
Well, since June, like June 1st, I think they're above 500. Like, they're actually playing good baseball. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, they're no longer the, you know, the worst team in baseball for several years. So as an Indians fan, I'm looking over my shoulder like, oh, stay back there. But
you still not have to worry about him. And I'm like, oh, wait, now they might come in and sweep us this weekend. Like, like, oh, great, here we go.
That's a realistic possibility now.
Yeah, and then it's like, oh, no. But, yeah, Funkhauser, like, I talked about him a couple weeks ago as a guy that Because I am a guy that likes to kind of grab these like seventh inning guys or longer relievers that you never know. They might run into one, but they could steal you a win or they'll help your ratios and get strikeouts. And Funkhauser's been outstanding. He's been like really, really good. You mentioned last 15 innings. He's just had a really good season overall, but of late has been outstanding. So I like that recommendation. He's like, for me, it's one of those, if the Tigers like decide to say, screw it, we're selling everybody, and all of a sudden they sell Cisnero and Soto, I'm guessing Funkhauser is the guy, but we'll see. Maybe they trade Funkhauser because some team's looking for a middle reliever. Who knows? But it is the Tigers after all, so we'll see how that goes. Kansas City Royals. This one has been a headache for many. You mentioned Scott Bartle got a save last night for his fifth of the year. You got Holland. You got Stomont. They each have five-plus saves. What are you doing with this bullpen?
I'm staying away. So Holland and Barlow are the only two relievers who have gotten saves for the Royals since June 1st. Like I said, Stamatz was in mid-May, and he's been bad since May 1st. But I'm just generally avoiding this committee. I mean, it's another committee. You know, Barlow is, you know, really good. You know, he had a stretch of games where he was struggling for a while, but I'm just not interested in this bullpen. At least from a fantasy perspective, right?
Yeah, it's a headache. It's a nightmare is what it is. It's a great bullpen if you have a saves hold league. So you're good there. But it's a nightmare everywhere else. Let's move on to the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. This is a fun one because Rossy Iglesias has been absolutely amazing. It feels like he almost doesn't get the – unless I'm just missing the conversations. It feels like he doesn't get the respect he deserves just because he's on the Angels right now. He's been so good as a reliever. And the Angels have been so bad. So I know you've put out some potential trade situations and other people have chatted about it. Do you think the Angels trade him?
Well, probably. They're 1-4 since the All-Star break. And those five games were against wild card contenders. They're now 7.5 games back of the wild card. And it's a shame. You know, Trout's coming back soon. Eventually Rendon will come back. I know he's suffered a setback, out a few more weeks, but you know, with Trout and Ohtani, what are they doing? Like, they got to get some pitching. So I think they'll trade him for some pitching, to be honest.
That'll be interesting to see. Cause you know, they need pitching. You have on your list, your Dylan Bundy's even like the fourth guy here. It shows you how bad their pitching's been. Is Bundy is in the bullpen now. If for some reason they do trade Iglesias, is it Mayer's job or do you think someone else steps in there?
I probably Mayer's, although he hasn't been good either. So, we'll see. They have, a couple guys in the minors, Chris Rodriguez and Reed Detmers, both were promoted to AAA today. Maybe they get a shot later this season, kind of in the role, but you know, they're more kind of starters. So I don't know what they're going to do. I would think Mayer's. I actually picked Mayer's up in the RotoWire staff league last weekend. Thinking they would trade Iglesias. So
yeah, we'll have to see how it goes. Like I'm as long as Iglesias, if he gets traded, is traded out of the NL West, I'll be happy because I'm very, very, I can just see it now. Like he goes to San Diego because they just can't have enough pieces. That's what they love to do. Or even LA.
Unless he goes to the Giants, right?
I'm good there. That's the only team you can go to. Otherwise, get out of California. Like go far, far away. Go to Colorado if you want or Arizona. I'm fine there. But yeah, go far, far out of California. Minnesota Twins. This is one where the Twins have been so bad. We talked about it earlier with Kirilloff that they've become sellers all of a sudden. You have Taylor Rogers. You have Hansel Robles getting some love. Duffy's been good out of the bullpen. What do you think happens? Like, do you think these guys get traded? If not, how do you kind of assess this bullpen?
Yeah, I think Rogers especially will be attractive to a lot of teams. That 57-8K to walk is really good. I just think a lot of teams will be interested in him. And Robles has been pretty good. He's gotten the most save opportunities for the Twins as of late, but I mean, they're losing games. There's not many save opportunities to come by. So I do think both get traded. Maybe Alex Colomé gets back the role. He hasn't been bad since July 1st, 3.18 ERA, 6-1 K to walk in 5 2/3. So, you know, maybe they'll go back to that. Well,
I like that call. I was always the Alex Colomé fan in recent years when he was actually good, and then he kind of had his hiccup last year. But sometimes it just takes, you know, a little humility. Go pitch the sixth inning for a while, guy. Go pitch the seventh inning and get your stuff together. Get the mind right because you know, you obviously see it with these relievers, and I've said it before and many others have, is it takes a special breed to close out a game. Like, you have to be mentally just different to close out a game. Yeah. And if that gets frazzled at all, like, it's going to be a mess for a little while. So, yeah, it could be just what he needed to get his mind right and then step right back in there. We'll see how that one goes. New York Yankees, Chapman has been a mess of late. Did pick up the save the other day, but still gave up a home run to McCutcheon in that process. So it wasn't the lights-out Chapman of old. And it's been bumpy. They put Britton back there. They put Chad Green back there. What are you doing with New York? Like, we just talked about guys like Funkhauser who can help you with ratios and whatnot. Britton and Green can't hurt you for the most of the time. Do you go and grab some of those guys that's speculating, or how do you do with the Yankees?
Yeah, so Britton was on my conditional bid list, a lot of leagues, but I did end up picking him up anywhere. But I think Chapman's fine. I think the All-Star break came at the right time for him. It was perfect time. If you look at his last five outings, he does have four scoreless outings over his last five. So still throwing gas. So I think that little break, the All-Star break, really, really helped him. But yeah, some of those guys you mentioned, Green, I really like Loaisiga. Supposed to be back this weekend. That'll be huge for that bullpen. Had he not gone on the COVID list, I think we might have seen him in the ninth, with Chapman getting a little bit of a break. But he's another one of those guys like Funkhauser where, you know, like Wells, capable of pitching multiple innings and you know, having that flexibility to pitch in multiple innings. You don't necessarily want to reserve him for the ninth unless you bring him in the eighth. So yeah, same with Green, Chad Green, the same way, you know, capable of pitching multiple innings. So I
like what Loaisiga has done this year. It's been he's been outstanding. Like you mentioned, the COVID list could be a week to get him for like a buck if he's sitting out there. I'm going to probably say it too many times, is as this season goes on and we start seeing innings limits put into play, that means probably even worse pitchers get called up to pitch and whatnot. Some of these long relievers are going to be much better for your roster than streaming some guys. So get them now while you can and fill it in while you can. It's not always easy. Like you mentioned, you have teams and others do that just have all the red briefcases, so you have nowhere to put them right now. But yeah, they do come in handy on certain weeks right now when you see, you know, you got the injuries, you only have so many starters. And like, well, the one starts at Yankee Stadium. I really don't want to start this guy at Yankee Stadium. Well, go throw the Wiser guy out there. Maybe he gets two or three appearances, gets you five-plus innings and five-plus Ks, and maybe sneaks a win in there for all you know. It turns out to be a pretty productive week.
Yeah, he's got like seven wins or something like that.
Yeah, he's been outstanding. Him and like Colin McHugh. Like McHugh's actually been talked about enough where I think he's pretty much getting – yeah, he's getting grabbed everywhere. But it's like the Rays, man. They always have one reliever. Like it was Yarbrough that one year. Now it's McHugh. It's just crazy. They always have a guy. Seattle Mariners, they have a couple guys here. Kendall Graveman, he's been pretty good closing. A little sketchy the other night, but been pretty good. The defense didn't help him at all. You have Paul Sewald, who's been outstanding this season. And then a couple other pieces back there. What are you doing with this bullpen? Because you imagine Graveman's probably going to get traded, I would think. But what's your thoughts on Seattle?
Maybe he gets traded. I don't know. Seattle's only three games back of the wild card. They have a huge four-game series this weekend against Oakland. And then they have three at home versus Houston right before the trade deadline. So depending on what happens over the next seven games, I really think they'll wait. If they do trade him, it will be at the last minute because they are right in the thick of the wild card. And, you know, what kind of message does it send to your fans if you trade your best reliever, like, you know, right in the thick of a wild card race? So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if the Graveman's on the move over the next week. We'll find out. But Sewald, I know, is a popular stash candidate in recent weeks because of the Graveman trade rumors. He earned a couple saves coming in and out of the All-Star break. Did struggle over his last two appearances, four earned runs, gave up a homer in each of those. So just something to monitor there. Drew Steckenrider has been really, really good too. Just one earned run allowed since June 6th. So bullpen's been great aside from Rafael Montero. It's been terrible. JT Chargois has been really good too. Only four walks and 27 in the third. So I'm really excited to see what they do. I could see them acquiring somebody like, you know, Taylor Rogers or Iglesias even. If they decide to become buyers,
that'd be crazy because it wasn't too long ago. It's like the Mariners like just out of it all. And then you mentioned three games out of this and that and big series coming up. I'm like, wow, imagine if Kalinic was actually hitting. Like that would be right. Like, oh man, because Torrance has been great. They got Cal Raleigh up. They're giving people chances. It's just because even like Shed Long, and then you have Lewis goes down with an injury, and they're still there. So that's pretty crazy to think about. Yeah. Last American League team on the list, the Tampa Bay Rays, because why not? They always love committees. As you mentioned, Diego Castillo's been doing the job. Pete Fairbanks snuck in a couple saves recently. If you are to roster some guys out of Tampa Bay, who are you rostering?
Yeah, I'm rostering Castillo and Fairbanks. I think they've gotten the most recent saves. I mean, Kittredge has got a couple. Jeffrey Springs has a couple. But they haven't gotten a save in a while. So I think Castillo and Fairbanks kind of the main guys right now. Nick Anderson's starting a rehab assignment soon, so it's something to monitor. He was their kind of closer for a while last year. But I think Kevin Cash will stay true to this committee. He's just never one to stick with just one guy. Hence the Fairbanks usage over the past, I think he got the team's most two recent saves. So yep. I'm sure they'll go back to Castillo right as everyone picks up Fairbanks again. So
I got about it. Like going into the season, I had a ton of Fairbanks and like DCs going, yep, that's the guy I want late. Because what we saw, the usage late in the postseason and everything, then he starts out the year just not even close to it again. I'm like, oh, thank you, Kevin Cash. But now we're back. Now we're back. So we'll see how long that lasts for. And I lied. We have one more American League team, the Texas Rangers. Ian Kennedy's been pretty decent for the Rangers this year, getting stuff done, kind of a last-minute throw into the closer role situation. You got Spores. You have Jolie Rodriguez. You would imagine Kennedy gets dealt. What are you doing with this Rangers situation?
Yeah, probably avoiding it too. It's tough because they have two real young guys, Joe Barlow and DeMarcus Evans, who are really exciting. I think the future kind of lies with them, but in the interim, maybe Josh Spores or Dennis Santana. I don't think those young guys kind of step into that role this year. Jolie Rodriguez has been bad this season. Brett Martin doesn't really fit the closer profile. He's only got a 6.6 K per nine. So I would think it goes to Spores or Dennis Santana, who came over from the Dodgers.
Yeah. Well, forgot all about Dennis Santana.
Yeah, he's been getting some eighth inning work lately. So yeah, we'll see. We'll see if he steps in. Because I have to imagine they'll trade Kennedy. I mean, there's no reason not to, right?
Yeah, I'm with you. There's no reason not to. And again, I lied. We have one more American League team because I'm so good at my alphabetical order here. The Toronto Blue Jays. They're going back to Toronto. Buffalo, their last game was on Wednesday night in Buffalo. Jordan Romano's been pretty darn good. Is it pretty much his job, do you see, going forward, or is there any concern about someone else jumping in there?
Well, I thought Julian Merriweather was going to kind of split the role with him, but he had a setback in his recovery. He still doesn't have a timetable to resume mound work. So mid to late August probably for him to come back. So I think Romano – probably going to keep the role for now. He's been pretty steady until July. In fact, over his last four appearances, he's given up 5 earned runs and served up 3 homers during that span, but still been great overall, 2.241 ERA, 7 saves. I think this team will definitely trade for another reliever. I had previously pegged them for Richard Rodriguez from the Pirates. Pirates GM Ben Cherington came from Toronto, knows the system well. I think it makes sense for them to kind of trade for Rich Rod if they want to push for the playoffs. Because everyone else is, like, really, aside from Romano, maybe Simber kind of reminds me of, like, Tyler Rogers Light with that, like, low K rate, but, like, soft contact. DeLeese has been bad. Chatwood's been bad. I mean, you can't put those guys in the ninth inning when they're walking 7 guys per 9. Like, that's stupid.
Now, if they do trade for Rich Rod, you'd imagine they trade for him to be the closer. But do you imagine he just walks in and takes the job from Romano, or like, would you be, if you're a Romano owner, basically, would you be concerned about losing your saves that way?
A little bit. I think they could probably split the role. I still think Romano is kind of the highest leverage reliever. They'll probably use him similar to the way Seattle uses Graveman, where it doesn't always get the ninth. But Rich Rod's been, you know, could fit that role too. So, you know, I could see them kind of splitting if they do acquire Rodriguez.
All right. Now we head to the National League and we start at the Arizona Diamondbacks. And it wasn't too long ago where everyone's like, screw Joaquin Soria. Why spend money on Joaquin Soria? The Diamondbacks can't win games, blah, blah, blah. Well, they lost like 22 in a row or something, whatever it was. Yeah. But now they're winning. They just swept the Pirates. They won, I think, 4 out of 6. Soria's getting saves. Now he's going to get traded. So what are you doing with the situation in Arizona?
Yeah, Soria's been really good since July 1st. 3 ERA, 1 whip, 13-1 K to walk, 6 saves, 9 innings. Really boosted his trade value. So certainly on the move. Options behind him are bad.
Very bad.
I mean, if I had to take a guess, maybe Noe Ramirez. He has a history with Torey Lugo, the Red Sox in 2015. Been pitching the eighth. But he might be a trade candidate too. So assuming anyone's even interested in Noe Ramirez, probably not. Tyler Clippard was just activated after missing 4 months. You know, he has experience in the role, albeit it was a long time ago. I think 2012, he was a Nats closer. So I don't know. This is really kind of a flip a coin, you know, maybe see. I really don't know. They have a couple young guys, Brett DeGuise and JB Bukauskas, but they've really struggled. So I think those are kind of the guys they want to be in the role eventually, but both have an ERA over 7. So I'd be surprised if they step into it.
So basically with Arizona, we're just going to wait and see because it's such a mess there. Like, it might not be worth the price of admission, basically. That sounds like a fun one there. Let's go to the Cubs. Craig Kimbrel has been amazing this season, like the Kimbrel of old, like the Atlanta Braves Kimbrel. He's been great. Very, very high chance he gets traded this trade deadline to where? Hopefully the Giants, but we'll see how that goes. Chafin's been good. Tapera's been good, but there are even rumors they might get traded too as just the fire sale in Chicago begins. Let's just have some fun with this. First off, if Kimbrel gets traded, who do you want as the closer? At the end of the trade deadline, who do you think's left standing?
So Kimbrel, assuming Kimbrel's moved first, which I don't know if he will be, I would want Tapera. Has experience in the role with Toronto, career low, 7.5 walk rate this season. I think he'll get kind of that first shot, but I think he's probably going to get traded too. So after the end of the trade deadline, I tweeted earlier today, I could see Rowan Wick, who's on rehab right now, looks really good in his rehab, and Rex Brothers kind of splitting the role. Brothers being the lefty, had 19 saves with Colorado in 2013, 14.5 K per nine, really tough on lefties. And then, you know, Wick, just being the compliment to him. Just a wild guess. So, you know, obviously none of this is set in stone, so don't, you know, go blowing your fam for Rex Brothers, but, yeah, it's something I could see happening.
Yeah, but the fun in listening to this now is you can go get him for a buck now, yeah, and just see what happens. If you have to drop him, it's a buck. Like, it's not the end of the world where if those trades all happen and Rex Brothers becomes a closer, you and I both know that it's going to be so much fun that following Sunday. So if you can get ahead of the game here, it's good. And Rowan Wick, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't he have some save chances in recent years as fill-in closer for the Cubs?
Yeah, last year, I think.
Yeah, that's what I thought, and it sounded familiar.
Yeah. So yeah, he's pitched in high leverage before. He would be the guy I would really kind of go after for the buck. Mm-hmm. Probably not Brothers, but we'll see how the other trade chips fall with this team because they're all free agents. Well, I think Chafin's got a mutual option next year, but Tapera, Dan Winkler is even a free agent next year, so they could trade their the whole bullpen, basically.
God. Yeah, you get Chris Bryant and 3 of our relievers. Go.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and then as long as Chafin goes somewhere where his personality won't get dwarfed, we'll be good because he's been fun just to watch and all that kind of stuff. So we'll see how that goes. Let's go to Cincinnati. Heath Hembree has been the closer of late. He's been good but also had some shaky moments out there, and then he comes in different like high leverage spots, so he's not always in the bullpen. Amir Garrett got a save the other day. It's been interesting, to say the least, in Cincinnati. What are you doing with this bullpen?
Yeah, I just think David Bell is one of those guys who likes to just mix and match. I want to say it's Lucas Simms' chair upon his return. He didn't really do anything to lose the job. He just got hurt. He was actually pitching really well. before he got injured. But Hembree and Garrett have both been really good since July 1st. Hembree 2.08 ERA, five saves. Overall, 14.5 K per nine. The things I worry about with Hembree is 2.2 homers per nine and a 6.32 ERA at home. Ooh. So, So I don't know. It's just kind of a random stat to watch out for there. With Garrett, he's only allowed three runs over his last 16 appearances, 19-5 K to walk in that span with four saves. So, it's just another one of those situations where it's just not one guy. They're just going to split. And, you know, when Sims returns, it's going to get even more murky. And if Antone even comes back later on, which I don't know how optimistic I am about him with, forearm strain, plasma injection, rehab.
Not,
so
not good.
He's going to start throwing bullpens next week, but, I'm a little less optimistic about Antone, but yeah, this is one of those bullpens just to kind of avoid.
Yeah, it's a tricky one because I liked Sims a lot going into the year. Like you said, he's pitching really well towards the end, but it's been a dicey situation to say the least. Let's head to Miami. Yimi Garcia, he got the job, then it got sketchy, so Bender stepped in for a bit, but then Yimmy's back there, and you've got a save again on Wednesday night. They might try to trade Yimi. I know Bender's been the popular name, Ryan. So what are you looking at here in this Miami situation?
Yeah, I think Yimi just got the most recent opportunity because they're trying to trade him. I think I speculated him going back to the Dodgers where he started his career. But yeah, he's been shaky, 6.59 ERA since June 1st. Pretty bad. Everyone started adding Bender as his, you know, possible replacement, but he's given up six earned runs over his last six appearances. So
never fails.
You know, yeah. It's always something, right?
Yep.
I think, it's either Bender or I think maybe they give Anthony Bass another crack at the role. He started the year as the closer, blew two saves real early on. And, you know, that's when Yimi took over, but I don't really think Floro has a, you know, that profile's walk rate's over 10% for the first time in his career. And I just don't think he's really, you know, he has two saves, but I don't think he's really closer material.
So, yeah, I know a lot of DCs I have would love to see Anthony Bass get saves again. So
yeah. Yeah, he was a big target of mine. I had him on like three teams, and then it was, you know.
Then it blew up. It blew up in all our faces.
Sure did.
Yeah, but it was value, Ryan. It was value when we drafted him, so it's okay. Let's head to the Mets. Edwin Diaz, when we all thought he'd figured it out and things were going good, it has gotten quite ugly again for Edwin Diaz, like really ugly again. You know, Seth Lugo's always been pretty good. Trevor May's been outstanding. There was times when he figured May would be like a future closer in Minnesota, never panned out. What are you trying to do here? Do you think Edwin Diaz loses the job and you want to get Lugo or May, or is Diaz just going to be the guy?
I think Diaz is a guy. Luis Rojas gave him a vote of confidence and said he would have gotten a save opportunity Tuesday against the Reds, but they trailed that whole game. So, you know, if he blows another one or two, I'm sure they'll turn to May. Everyone's, you know, panicking about Seth Lugo after his five earned run blow up during the short week where everyone was starting relievers, you know. Mm-hmm. But I'm not worried about him after one bad outing. He's been good in like every one of his other appearances. So could easily see them turning to Lugo. May has logged actually the team's two most recent saves. As you said, he's been good, but always homer prone. You know, he's always had an issue with that. So, you know, it will all depend on what Diaz does his next time he has a save chance.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Like, we know how good he can be. It's just been – it could just be one of those stretches. We'll see how it goes. But I like Trevor May, and then we love Lugo. Like, Lugo kind of fits that mold of those multi-inning guys we talked about earlier, that he's going to have a lot more good starts than bad, or good outings than bad, and he can really rack things up for you. So, and if they keep having pitching issues, you might see him go back to the rotation like we saw before, and he was quite productive in that role as well. A couple more to go here. Philadelphia Phillies, they have Ranger Suarez, has been looking – pretty good in the pen. You got Hector Neris still sitting around giving up home runs. You got Alvarado. It's been a mess, this bullpen. It is a complete disaster. So are you on the team Ranger Suarez? Or are you kind of speculating elsewhere?
Yeah, I picked Suarez up in a couple of leagues. I do think this is a committee between Suarez and Neris. Alvarado's just been bad over his last eight outings. He's got an ERA over 11. And overall is 19% walk rate. That's just, you don't want that for your closer. So I think Suarez, who holds lefties under 100 batting average, and Neris, who does well against righties, I think it's just gonna, they're just gonna split the saves between them. Archie Bradley actually has 8 consecutive scoreless outings, but only 2 strikeouts over 9 innings during that span. So I don't think he's an option. I even wonder if the Phillies will try to trade him to upgrade their pen. But right now, I think it's Suarez and Neris.
That's pretty crazy. Archie Bradley got paid, and he still can't find the ninth inning rule. That's how things have gone there. But one thing you mentioned that I'm kind of happy you mentioned is I still think Neris gets some love too. I can't remember what show I was on recently, and they asked, how do you think the Philly situation ends up? And I said, I wouldn't be shocked if Neris gets the most saves the rest of the way. Like, I think Suarez is still very much in play, and I kind of like the committee mode you're talking about there, but I don't think Neris is going away. This happened a couple years ago with him. Is he started out as a closer, he struggled, and they put him right back in there.
So yeah, I agree.
I think he's still meant to be in that back end somewhere. So we'll see how that goes. But I have some Ranger Suarez as well. I have a little bit of both. I'm a sucker for punishment, I guess, in Philadelphia. Last National League team we have here, the Pittsburgh Pirates. We mentioned Rich Rodriguez likely getting traded, very highly likely getting traded. Were you looking at that Pittsburgh bullpen? I know they don't win a lot of games, but they might have like 10 save chances the rest of the way. So where are we looking?
Yeah, I think David Bednar is the most obvious choice to close. ERA under 3, 11.1 K per 9. And he's been getting higher leverage work ever since Kyle Crick was DFA'd. So a lot of people thought Crick might step into that role, but he had he was walking batters, 7 walks per 9. So probably why I got DFA'd. So I think Bednar probably steps in. Another person to watch is Kyle Keller. He was recently recalled a few weeks ago. Posted a 2.20 ERA, 0.86 WHIP, and 26-1 K to walk in 16 innings during his most recent stint in the minors. So pretty good. Obviously, really hasn't pitched high leverage yet. So if Bednar doesn't work out, it's kind of a deeper target to look at.
No, that's good to know, because Pittsburgh, when they do win games, it's usually close. So you're going to get some save chances there. They're not blowing teams out of the water, but they have a sneaky good offense. They don't strike out a lot, so they might get more saves than you think. And Rich Rod's out of town. So it's like, if you had to this week, and everything we just talked about, first off, is there any more teams that I missed that have interest to you coming into the trade deadline?
I don't think so. I think we covered all 30
all
teams.
The main ones. Yeah, I think we did too. With all that we talked about, though, kind of all the speculative ads, who might be some of your top spec ads, like maybe this weekend or as the trade deadline looms?
Yeah, so I really liked Anthony Bender and Sewold for closers. You just obviously have to watch to see what happens with Graveman. Lucas Sims, if he's available, I would go back and get him. Even though it's a committee there, he'll help you out and with strikeouts and his ratios. So those would be kind of my top stashes. The rest of the stashes aren't as appealing just because they play for shittier teams. Guys like Bednar and Carlos Estevez and Mayers and Spores. Maybe go get Tyler Wells too, that we talked about at the top of the show.
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
Yeah.
We have one listener question, because we already answered the Wells question. So we have one left, and that is from Taylor Johnson. He asks, he's at A Stat 32, with David Price building up as a starter, he's actually looked good his last couple chances out there. Where would you rank him rest of the season among starting pitchers for you? So if Price is out there, and is he like a top 100 starting pitcher for you if he gets stretched out?
Yeah, I would think so.
Top 50?
maybe right there. Yeah. Right there.
Okay. Yeah, and then and I think he'll have his moments. He's always been a strikeout guy, but we have seen he's getting older, and sometimes it gets a little wonky. But it's the Dodgers. It's not a bad thing. And then would you stop – this one kind of made me laugh. Would you stop with Kyle Gibson? I think Kyle Gibson's been pretty good, except his last two starts both against Detroit.
Would I drop him for Price? No.
No.
Okay. Gibson's been great for 15 of his 18 starts. So I'll give 2 bad starts a pass.
Yeah. And like I said, out of all teams that showed up against the Detroit Tigers, of course, that took it to Kyle Gibson, which
Juggernaut.
It's wild, man. But they are like everyone wants to joke about it, and they've earned that right. But I do in DFS, I look at like monthly splits, and they're hitting the baseball. It's crazy. Yeah. They're hitting. They're pitching okay. Scooble's been great. You mentioned Funkhauser, and that bullpen's been, and Soto and company have been setting things down. It'll be interesting. For your Cleveland Indians, what do you think they do this trade deadline?
Probably nothing. I don't know. They're out of pretty much playing themselves out of the wild card race now. I think they're only a couple games above 500 now. Jose Ramirez has been hurt. He's been out of the lineup past couple days. I haven't checked to see if he's in the lineup today. But yeah, I don't think they do much. If anything, they'll trade maybe Brian Shaw. Out of the bullpen, but I would love to see them acquire some outfield depth. I had such high expectations for, with Eddie Rosario out, they called up Daniel Johnson, and I drafted them on like all my DC teams and was thinking he's going to be great, but he's just, strikes out too much at the big league level. So Bradley Zimmer has been pretty good though. I don't know. I'd like to see them upgrade their outfield though, but we'll see.
Yeah, Mercado's getting on base and stealing, so you got that going for you. There's such a Bieber's back soon, right?
I don't remember the latest update on him. I still before the All-Star break, it was still a couple weeks before he even does his rehab. So
yeah, and Plesac hasn't looked good. Savali, I think, is rehabbing now. Yeah. So.
I don't know. The local radio guys here in Cleveland talk about like we should trade Jose Ramirez now. Get the most return for him because we waited too long to trade Lindor. The return wasn't amazing. Ned Rosario's been good, but Jimenez hasn't been good. And I don't know. That would suck. I could see him doing it.
I wouldn't be surprised because I get their logic of go get him while you can get some stuff for him, basically.
Yeah.
But man, first Lindor and then J-Ram in like a 12-month process.
His contract is just so friendly. Like the return for him if they traded him now would be huge. And if they had a 9-game losing streak recently, if they get swept by the Rays this weekend and, lose their next five before the trade deadline, I could see it.
Most definitely. And he'll probably go to like the Dodgers or something. So that'd be great. That'd be really good. Cause that's what the Dodgers do is take highly, highly talented people. And even if they don't need them, they take them, but wouldn't be surprised about that. But Ryan, I think that'll wrap us up for today's episode. Any final thoughts on the closing situation on the rest of the fantasy baseball season that you want to leave the listeners with?
No, I'm good. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it, Bubba. And thanks to all your listeners for listening to me ramble on about closers for an hour. I really appreciate it. And this podcasting is new to me. It's not, my most comfortable thing to do. So appreciate you giving me a chance and I look forward to doing it again sometime.
Yeah, we definitely will do it again sometime. And you're a natural, so I wouldn't be too worried about it. Even though it's new to you, you're just fine. Like I tell everybody like that get nervous or whatever. Mom, you like baseball. I like baseball. We're talking baseball. So it's a real simple thing. It's just a stupid microphone involved. That's all it is. just think of it as two guys at a bar talking baseball. So it's real simple stuff there. But everybody check out Ryan on Twitter at Ryan Ruf, RUFE, and his work over at rotowire.com. As we've had many RotoWire people on the show, and I've said it many times, I've been a subscriber to RotoWire since college. So we're going on way too long now. Don't even want to count that up, but it's been a long time. So go check out rotowire.com and all the goodies. I know they have a 10-day free trial, all that good stuff. So check them out. Check Ryan out on Twitter. Check out the Closers Grid as well. And we'll be back with you guys next week as this was Bench with Bubba, episode 387. See you guys later.
connects better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. Because you'll feel protected no matter how the wind blows. Also, you can keep enjoying the home of your dreams. And our expert agents can help you save up to 23% when you bundle home with auto. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. American Family Insurance. Get a quote? Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.